Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Etner. We're talking with Dmitry Orlov, the author of Reinventing Collapse. And we're going to go to the phones. We've got Radkin on from Aalborg. Hello, Radkin.
Yes, thank you very much, Carl. What I've learned in my search for the truth is that we are constantly being lied to, either directly, indirectly, or most insidiously, by omission. And your first guest, I wouldn't know where to begin. The only thing I would confer with is his belief in expansion of globalization, and that is the design. He lied to us about the fact it was the people that caused this economic depression. It was all caused, it was all planned 15 years ago by the IMF and World Bank. That's how they implode third world countries, and now they're doing it to the U.S. all by design. And I would love them to address how Barry Sartor, supposedly our president, a.k.a. Barack Mohammed Hussein Obama, born in Kenya, how he is appointed. 11 of his cabinet members are members of the Trilateral Commission, and their mission statement is a world government.
Okay, we're going to ask Dmitry. Okay, going to ask Dmitry about that. Dmitry, Trilateral Commission, what role do they play in the coming developments?
Well, my general method is to never ascribe villainy where mere incompetence suffices.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that people who think that, you know, infinite economic growth on a finite planet is possible are pretty much wrong, and that if they try to paper that over by just borrowing a lot of money and generating a pyramid of debt instead of actual economic growth, which has happened for the past 5 years, then the workout is really quite horrendous. Once you start falling behind, you know, you can have exponential economic growth until you start running out of resources. But if you start falling behind and start borrowing instead of actually making stuff, then if you start going into debt at an exponential rate, and that's in fact what's happened. So now, you know, the trillion is the new billion. You know, a trillion here, a trillion there, and next week we'll start talking about tens of trillions, and it still won't help. And so it doesn't really matter what kind of system you put together. You know, eventually it just runs into some very straightforward physical limits and starts falling apart. Mm. What I'm really interested in is getting people away from this big picture and trying to get them to think about their lives and the things that they can actually do to put together a life support system, a local life support system for themselves and their families and their friends.
Mm.
Get them away from thinking about the Federal Reserve or other things that they can't possibly affect.
244-1777 is a number if you'd like to ask a question of Dmitry Orlov, or toll-free outside the Waterbury area, 877-291-8255. Dmitry, you write about John Michael Greer. He's the author of Long Descent. We had him on this show a couple months ago. He talks about a patchy catabolic collapse, as he calls it, of civilization, as it uses its own manufactured goods as raw materials into the next stage of production. And I'm wondering if in this patchy collapse that Greer sketches, if that could be an area of agreement between you and our previous guest, Bill Hallal, that this information-driven technology, smart cars, telemedicine, could continue in some urban areas, some parts of the world, for quite a few decades at the same time that we're seeing people, because of energy availability, because of financial collapse, we're seeing a lot of suffering in other places.
Well, I think that there isn't really any disagreement between me and John Michael. He talks about civilizations, and civilizations persist for a really long time and go through little cycles of rebirth here and there when the conditions are right. So, you know, 15 years from now, we might have a few years of stable climate and suddenly lots of people will start growing wheat again. Things like that do happen. But, you know, I think that it's far more important to concentrate on the here and now. We're in a crisis. We need to get people thinking about things that will actually work. Buying a new car is not going to work. Just drive the car you have. So stop thinking about some smart thing that's, you know, 20% better than what you have now, because if you just picked up hitchhikers, suddenly the per passenger fuel efficiency of the car you have now would be quadrupled. So those are the adaptations that people should start thinking about, not these pie-in-the-sky techno ideas that are too expensive and won't be there because nobody's going to lend us money to buy new cars.
Mm. After we had you on the show the last time, you published a talk called The Five Stages of Collapse. Do you want to tell us about those five stages briefly in the 5 minutes we have left?
Yes. A year ago, before people started talking about economic collapse for real, they were talking about an economic crisis at the time. I published this Five Stages of Collapse article, and then I expanded on it at a conference in Michigan last fall. And the stages of collapse, as I defined them, were financial collapse, which is basically faith in various types of debt pyramids collapses. And then that's followed by commercial collapse, which is basically lack of credit going to various companies makes it impossible for them to continue. And waves of bankruptcies and et cetera sweep through the landscape. A lot of companies disappear. A lot of storefronts are shuttered. And then political collapse follows as the tax base collapses, as we're witnessing in California, for instance, now, where municipal services such as garbage removal and public transportation and bridge and road maintenance and sewage are not, they don't receive enough funds to maintain them. Schools are closed. You know, they're talking about shortening the school year in some places. And that sort of works through the system as well. And altogether, what the result is that the life support system that most people depend on that allows them to use money instead of dealing with each other directly and just, you know, trade favors, you know, that disappears. So people have to fall back on, you know, who you know, what access do you have resources to? How can you make it work in your immediate environment with the people you know?
And then you look on to social and cultural collapse as being off in the future, somewhat avoidable, correct?
Yes. I hope that these are completely avoidable. The first three, that's like trying to change the course of a hurricane, you know, or a tsunami. There's fantastic amount of momentum and tinkering with the system. The way, you know, people in Washington are now trying to do, you know, is going to be about as fruitless as what Gorbachev did during Perestroika. There's really very little opportunity to make things better on that level. But I think social and cultural collapse are, you know, avoidable if people invest enough effort. The pattern of economic development that's been followed allowed people to not deal with each other face-to-face at all. People can walk around talking on their iPhones and not noticing their neighbors or people on the street or anyone else. So the real sense of immediate sense of community in terms of people knowing each other and dealing with each other face to face has been destroyed in a great number of places, but not everywhere. So really the thing to concentrate on that on is bringing that back and then using that to build up a new life support system where you grow your own food or somehow have access to food, have access to shelter, have a secure environment for yourself and your family and your kids. You know, those are the big ones. And have some mobility as well, you know, so that if you look forward and decide that, well, I won't be able to afford to drive, then start bicycling or, you know, come up with another alternative.
One of the new programs here in Vermont that I've been plugging in recent weeks is, it's in East Montpelier, Marshfield, Plainfield, Montpelier area, probably a few other places around the state, sponsored by local people and Efficiency Vermont. It trains people to go into their neighbors' homes and after they're invited, of course, and do a quick energy audit and then pull together materials to do the small things that lay people can do to have the equivalent of a barn raising, but it's more of a leak patching session in people's houses. And Efficiency Vermont will provide some gizmos to make that easier. Does that sound like the sort of thing you're calling for, Dimitri?
That's one type of thing that can certainly be done. Another thing that's being done right now in Minneapolis is there are activists also in Florida. There are activists who break into vacant foreclosed properties and then match them up with homeless families so that the homeless families have a place to live. Another thing has been happening in Philadelphia.
I need to stop right there. We're out of time. Could you give us your blog address quickly?
Sure. It's Club Orlov, C-L-U-B-O-R-L-O-V, blogspot.com.
Very good. Dmitry Orlov, author of Reinventing Collapse, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Carl Ettenayer. That's it for today's Equal Time. Travin's in tomorrow. Anthony Polino will host Wednesday, Thursday. I'll be back next Monday. Don't forget to check equaltimeradio.com for podcasts of the shows that I do. Thanks to Artie Levine for engineering, and stay tuned for Jack Donovan at 2 o'clock.